In the late 1800s at Purdue, summers typically were dull times, but on occasion included some wild adventures, like the time John T. McCutcheon, George Ade, and a friend named Jasper Dresser decided to do some boating, even though the Wabash River was in high flood and spread out far over the bottoms, its angry, sullen current carrying branches, logs, and other flotsam. As John McCutcheon writes in a diary, "I don't know why we thought this would be a good time to go boating. But the boys rode up the old Erie Canal and then, some miles up, portaged the boat over the Wabash and started down with the current, a mad rush homeward. Darkness came on. We shot under the Brown Street Bridge, and then through the gloom we saw we were headed for one of the stone piers of the Main Street Bridge. Frantically, we used our oars and barely cleared it. But unfortunately, we did not see the tree that jutted out from the tangled mass lodged against the pier and overhanging the swirling waters by only a couple of feet. We ducked and tried to ward it off with our hands, but the swift current yanked the boat from under us. We were left dangling from the tree, our legs in the rushing water. We yelled and yelled. Jasper said he couldn't hang on any longer, but we begged him to because we couldn't help him. Finally, somebody heard us. And just as Jasper's hands were slipping, old Joker Hill came and rescued us. Joker Hill was the boatman at the end of the bridge, and we had chartered our craft from him. Later, it transpired that he had first rescued his boat, thus distracting somewhat from the nobility of his heroic deed." That's from the early chapters of Slow Ball Cartoonist, the extraordinary life, as we are told, of Indiana native and Pulitzer Prize winner John T. McCutcheon of the Chicago Tribune. Well, John T. McCutcheon is, or ought to be, a well-known local celebrity. A Lafayette native and a graduate of the then young Purdue University, John McCutcheon became the first Chicago Tribune staff member to earn the Pulitzer Prize for his poignant 1931 cartoon about a victim of bank failure at the height of the Great Depression. Yet for all his fame in pre-World War II America, John T. McCutcheon is not that well known today. A pity. Today's book, Slow Ball Cartoonist, sets out to bring this fascinating Hoosier, this fascinating Lafayette native, back into our consciousness. McCutcheon was born in the late 19th century into a generation that was to develop into the Hoosier Renaissance, a stellar assemblage of native-born Hoosiers who, by and large, went off to seek fame and fortune in Chicago and New York and ended up enriching American cultural life and music and literature, political commentary. We count among those Hoosiers the McCutcheon brothers, John T., the cartoonist, and George Barr, his older brother and novelist. Lew Wallace, songwriters Hoagy Carmichael, and Cole Porter, playwright George Ade, and novelist Booth Tarkington, and, of course, naturalist Gene Stratton Porter. Well, John T. McCutcheon does not seem to have been much aware of the many Hoosiers with whom he would soon be associated, though he was, we learn, more than aware of his growing fame as a Chicago newspaper cartoonist, expanding his pre-internet, pre-television reach with an ongoing lecture circuit throughout the Midwest, kind of the pre-internet way of getting yourself well-known. To its credit, Slow Ball Cartoonist is told much through the use of McCutcheon's own diaries and reminiscences. The use of his own writings, clearly an ironic twist, since McCutcheon earned his fame as a nationally syndicated cartoonist, nonetheless brings a closeness and an intimacy to the biography that many writers of life stories miss to their readers' loss. And so it is that we learn of McCutcheon's early life in the 1870s on a more or less prosperous farm outside of Lafayette, Indiana, the site of the first brick building in Tippecanoe County, we are told. And then his middle years, moving with his family into the small town, not yet part of Lafayette, of Elston. McCutcheon has fond memories, or at least we are presented with fond memories, of those early years, both outside of Lafayette and then moving to that small town of Elston, which is now, of course, part of Lafayette, the city. Here are a few notes from McCutcheon's reminiscences of those early years out in the countryside and then in the village of Elston. Jean LaPelle's house, silent and deserted, McCutcheon wrote, and believed to be haunted. Something had happened there, another mystery. It bore a gruesome brand and was avoided by everyone. Up that same road plodded the local bogeyman, Thornton Cyrus. He had become harmlessly demented at the death of his wife and now traveled through the country, dragging a little wagon and a large doll. Thorntown Cyrus exercised such a hold on my imagination that whenever his name was invoked, I always was careful to behave. At night, I would lie in bed with nothing to do except listen to the killdeer birds calling across the misty bottomlands down by the creek. Later in the darkness, if the wind were right, the sound of an accordion came up from a neighbor's farm, playing the Year of Jubileo, or Listen to the Mockingbird. A little bit later, as I wrote, the family relocated to the tiny village of Elston, about 2 miles from what was then Lafayette, and the family occupied a two-story brick house that belonged to a cousin. To the young J.T.M., we are told, it was not much of a place, as he remembers. Go south from Lafayette, then the Wabash River on your right, climb up a hill to the old Lafayette Junction, and go 2 miles farther. You will now arrive at the outskirts of Elston. If you are in a car, you will slide through it so quickly you hardly are aware of it as a settlement. But in that day, in 1880, there were no cars or even bicycles. Your horse-drawn vehicle would plod along past an occasional house, reach a toll gate no longer in use, and then perhaps draw up at a watering trough in front of a two-story brick store flanked by a one-story frame saloon. From this simple nucleus, which consisted the business district, 20 to 30 unpretentious dwellings were strung out for a mile or so. In the blazing sun of a summer day, you could not find a sleepier setting of uneventfulness in all the land. Yet it was the glamorous background for absorbing activities. A belief I've had for a long time is that it doesn't matter where one is, it's wholly a matter of what one does while there that makes life interesting. Imagination is the handmaiden of adventure, and when aided by enterprise, no life can be wholly dull. Well, certainly McCutcheon's life became anything but dull, like so many of his contemporaries and young people since, after pursuing his degree in mechanical arts at Purdue University. He goes off to the big city for an adventure and perhaps to find his fortune and fame, moving to Chicago in the 1890s when the boomtown was well underway. Not long after that, his cartooning career began. And in the summer of 1903, John McCutcheon becomes a minor celebrity in Chicago and then much of the Midwest, thanks to his bird cartoons, penned at and published by the Chicago Herald Record. Through them, McCutcheon portrayed the everyday goings-on in a small Hoosier town and made a name for himself with many readers who enjoyed his exploration of small-town values and quirky if endearing characters who reminded so many Chicagoans, we are told, of their own small-town origins and their own relatives back in the hinterlands. As McCutcheon himself writes of the genesis of that cartoon series, one very dull day, when ideas were scarcer than hen's teeth, I found myself in desperation for a subject for the following morning cartoon. As a final resort, I drew a picture of a church social such as I had known in the early Indiana days. Church socials happened to be in season just then, but I am certain I had no definite purpose in mind. I called it Bird Center, a name George Ade had once used in a fable. People commented and wrote in favorably, so a week later I drew a second cartoon and accompanied it with comments and items as if by the local editor. I introduced types I had known in real life in a country town and gave them definite names, which the editor of the Bird Center Argosy used in his list of among those present. Our author goes on to tell us that regular characters included the minister, his wife and their numerous children, a local doctor, the judge, the town drunkard, Captain Fry, the Civil War veteran, Smiley Green, the popular town undertaker, and J. Milton Brown, the tintype artist. Anyone from a small town would recognize the characters as types to be found in most smaller communities. John McCutcheon also added a rich local matron, quote, whose name is always first of those present, end quote. In addition, there was the village Lothario, and a wag, who was a great hand with the girls. No one ever took the Lothario seriously except visiting young ladies. Two young men played mandolins, and their dulcet strains evoked economies at all social gatherings. While some criticized the Bird Center cartoons as a stereotypical representation of country life, John McCutcheon disagreed. Quote, "It may be said that these types are conventional and hackneyed, but if a defense were necessary, it would be supplied by the obvious fact that all small towns are conventional, and the adventures of the social set are rather hackneyed." Much as if he were a TV journalist of note today, a bidding war soon broke out between the Herald and the Chicago Tribune for John McCutcheon's cartooning services, a war which escalated into salary offers that were beyond the pale for the Times. While at first John McCutcheon held fast to his small-town values of loyalty to his original employer, in the end he jumped ship and went over to the Chicago Tribune, where his fame was only to grow. As I noted earlier, John McCutcheon is portrayed in Slowball Cartoonist as a man of convention and somewhat shy, but he was not immune to the siren calls of celebrity. He's portrayed as yearning for social levity and has what he described as a resulting dalliance with alcohol. We read as well about pride in having his cartoon of a former pope become part of the Vatican archives. Well, we can't get a full measure of the man without looking at his family and his friends as well, and so we learn more than a little about the McCutcheon family. His older brother, George McCutcheon, for instance, was early in his life an aspiring actor, traveling southern Indiana and well into Kentucky one summer before returning dejected, only to take up a job at the Lafayette Journal-Courier, rising to city editor, and scribbling, we are told, many, many plays and manuscript, none of which were well received, until one day he penned his hugely and suddenly popular Graustark series at the turn of the last century, and his still popular Brewster's Millions. For all my praise of this delightful biography of a local boy done good from long ago, I do have two criticisms. First and foremost, there are no cartoons to speak of. Kind of a strange turn of events, given that Slowball Cartoonist is about John McCutcheon's great cartooning talent. And second, outside of references in McCutcheon's own diaries, which are rich in description, as I think you've discovered, there is little sense of place in Slowball Cartoonist. One could argue that the growing town of Lafayette and the exploding metropolis of Chicago are all too often both just places John T. McCutcheon lived and worked in this book. Color, feel, perception are scarce. And while this does not detract from the biography, which is well written, it surely does detract from the drama. That, I think, could have been woven, a drama of place running behind this interesting personality. Still, in the end, Slowball Cartoonist is worth a bit of your time. If nothing else, to learn more about this small-town Lafayette boy who made a name for himself and his Hoosier values at a time when America was lurching from a remote outpost into a world power, and John T. McCutcheon had a bit to do with that lurching forward. Thank you, Purdue Press, for publishing this book. I'm going to give the last word to one of John T. McCutcheon's best friends, and certainly a man well-known here in Greater Lafayette, the great humorist George Ade. He wrote this about John T. McCutcheon's work. I think it's a fitting way to end our review. McCutcheon's cartoon of the boy away from home at Christmas time solaced many a homesick lad. The heart of the soldier who didn't get a letter was consoled by McCutcheon's cartoon. The nation, the whole nation, understands and loves Injun Summer. It can be said that there was more than art in McCutcheon's work, more than pen lines, composition, technique, and action to his cartoons, for in his work there breathed the spirit of kindliness and friendliness. It was the spirit of John T. McCutcheon. Those who studied and admired Mr. McCutcheon's cartoons in the Daily Press doubtless have been favorably impressed by the two eminent characteristics of his intent, Ade continues. First, he cartoons public men without grossly insulting them. Second, he recognizes the large and important fact that politics does not fill the entire horizon of the American people. In his cartoons, we admire the clever execution and the gentle humor which diffuse all of his work. But I dare say that more than all, we admire him for his considerate treatment of public men and his blessed wisdom in getting away from the hackneyed political subjects and giving us a few pictures of that everyday life, which is our real interest. Slow Ball Cartoonist, the extraordinary life of Indiana native and Pulitzer Prize winner John T. McCutcheon of the Chicago Tribune by Tony Gorell Franson. It's a fascinating look at a Lafayette native done well in Chicago and indeed throughout the country, perhaps even throughout the world. It's available at all of our fine local libraries because who wouldn't want this in this great bicentennial year, and certainly at the West Lafayette Public Library.